Is there a...
So just some ground rules for this. We have a...
Well, good morning to everybody. We're delighted to have the opportunity for the City of Addison to ask us for some of our input, which we will give it to you very candidly, I can assure you. This is a short hit, as you know, so obviously a lot of these aren't well-formed thoughts, but they're going to be thoughts in consequence of the discussion we're having today and your presentation. So very briefly, just to reiterate what Tom said, as to the audience, this is not an interactive session. This is purely a session between the sponsor and the panelists. We're delighted to have you as observers. And then with that, I'd like to just go around the room and start. My introduction is I'm a residential developer from the San Francisco Bay Area and have been in this business for probably over 40 years and chaired many of these panels, and I'm delighted to have this opportunity today.
And I'm Dan Anderton. I'm with a group called Dewberry. I'm actually based out of this area. And I'm a community and urban designer and have the opportunity of serving on a few panels and very much enjoy looking at the overall design concepts. And looks like you've got some really interesting and fun stuff going on here, so I look forward to being able to comment on that.
David McCracken from Sydney, Australia. I have my own advisory strategic development. I was 20 plus years at Medley in the Australian market, spent time in the UK and Europe, for example. The last 10 years or so, I've been advising the government on some of the big land releases, particularly around San Portland.
Good morning, I'm Ross Tillman, transportation planning consultant in Seattle, a longtime ULI member, and pretty much a panel junkie.
I'm Dan Conway. I'm with THK Associates. We're a market feasibility firm in Denver, Colorado. I've served on 35 of these panel advisory services and enjoy it very much. I always learn a lot, so it'll be fun to hear your presentation.
My name is Allison Davis. I'm Director of Strategic Planning in Washington, D.C. at Metro. I'm representing right here at the table. And so we're both Metro Rail and Metro Bus, as well as Paratransit Interactive. So I'm excited to comment about the transit element of this. And to counter the 35, this is my first panel. So I'm excited to participate.
Good morning. My name is Molly McKay. I'm a principal with Wildan Financial Services here in Washington, D.C. I'm a real estate and economic development consultant, also a former associate of ULI's International and Advisory Services. So I think I staffed 10 to 15 panels back in the day. So I'm also a panel junkie. It's sort of in my blood. And I'm very excited to be here today. So thank you for the opportunity.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Wes Pearson, and I'm the city manager for the town of Addison. And I real quickly want to make an introduction to our team. I'm joined today by Charles Goff, who's our director of development services. One of our deputy city managers, Ashley Mitchell, behind you. And then we've got our consultant team here, Fred Merrill and David Leininger. I think you guys know them. We're excited to be with you today because we want to participate in this advisory services panel and express our gratitude to you for your time and attention, and we look forward to your input. Addison is a really unique place, and you may ask yourself what's unique about a town with 16,000 residents. You might compare this with other small communities you're familiar with and already have an idea of what you would see in Addison, but Addison is not a quaint little town, but a thriving business center with a strong reputation as a hub of innovation where people love to have a good time. Due to our location in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area, literally at the center of it all. And within our 4.4 square miles, there's a major business aviation airport, more than 10 million square feet of commercial office, and a daytime population of over 125,000 people. And we're home to more than 190 restaurants, 23 hotels, and you can add to that list. For our size, we punch far above our weight. But I hope that as you listen to our presentation and as we engage in discussion about this transit-oriented development opportunity, that you'll keep all of this in mind and see this as an opportunity, the opportunity that we do, hopefully an opportunity to do something very special. So thank you very much for your time.
I'd like to add on to
As Wes said, I'm Charles Goff. I'm the Director of Development Services for the Town of Addison.
Hold on. With that, I'd say the next step is for you to make your presentation and to give us the things that you'd like us to focus on.
So, yeah, we'll speed through this. There's a lot of information in the presentation that we won't touch on directly. We just want to provide that to the panel for you all to have that information. But to start, this is the agenda. I'm going to provide a little bit of introduction and context to Addison so that you know a little bit more about the community. I'll talk about the study area and our findings of the study that we went through, and then hand it over to Fred to talk about some scenarios to discuss. And then David will close it out with a real estate market snapshot and then talk a little bit about the process that we're thinking about going through the master developer solicitation and get your feedback on that. So first up, the introduction and context. The purpose of today is really to present our thoughts about this development site and get the panel's input on the vision and our proposed engagement process to both the development community and our stakeholders just to make sure we're on the right track or get any feedback that you may have to offer. A little bit more about Addison and where we're at. We are in North Texas. We're an inner-ring suburb of Dallas. We're just a little bit north of downtown Dallas. For those of you that may be more familiar with the area, we are along the Dallas-North Tollway, north of Interstate 635 and south of the George Bush Turnpike. On the right side of the screen is a map of Addison. Admittedly, we're kind of a little jigsaw puzzle-shaped town. As Wes mentioned, one of our major features is Addison Airport. That's the main general aviation airport for the North Texas area. A lot of business aviation as well as some recreational aviation uses as well. And then that white little area above Arapahoe Road, that's the location of the study area within Addison. Wes already gave you a little bit of a flavor of Addison. As he mentioned, if you look at our residential population or just our square miles, you might get a different picture of what we are, but we are a destination commercial center. So we think that we are important in that way. We're not a sleepy residential area. The study area that we're going to talk about is adjacent to an established neighborhood called Addison Circle. Addison Circle was an early example of suburban new urbanist development. It's very established, has a mix of uses, residential, commercial, as well as some retail. The picture on the bottom left corner of the screen probably doesn't do it justice, but on the north side of the study area is Addison Circle Park. That's about a 10-acre park that is host to three major events throughout the year that Addison hosts, where we welcome tens of thousands of people from all around the world for those events over the course. All right. Are you back on? Okay, good. All right. So, we have the three major events that we think will complement this development well. We don't want to do anything with this development that'll harm those events, but we just wanted to provide you kind of a picture of what is existing adjacent to this site that we want to continue in this development. The other kind of major influencing factor of why we're here today is the Cotton Belt Rail Line. DART, which is our transit authority in Dallas, is planning to have passenger rail service on this line by the end of 2022. It's a 26-mile corridor that runs from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport in the west over to Plano, which is another northern suburb in the east, with several stops along the way, and we're about at the 50-yard line of that. What's also unique about this transit line is it connects DART's other transit lines, a northern connection point to the Orange Line, the Green Line, and the Red Line. And so with that context, I wanted to talk a little bit about the study process and the study area and the findings of the study that we went through. First, just some facts about the area. This is a map. You can see the existing Addison Circle development. The study actually looked at two areas around Addison Circle. In the top left corner of the screen, you see one area. That was pretty, the findings of the study were pretty straightforward there, just continue the residential feel over there. So we won't focus on that today. The main area is that southern area along the Cotton Belt Rail Line and talk about how we can extend Addison Circle south and to incorporate the transit-oriented development there. The southern study area consists of 29 acres, coincidentally also has 29 parcels, 12 different property owners, but I think one of the distinguishing factors here is that the town and then DART are major property owners in this area. Combined, we have about 71% of the ownership. That's the town is the yellow area there, and then the light blue, down here, that's the DART property. These next few are we're going to speed through these. These are just for background information for the panel. This is the existing land use in the area, existing zoning. Addison Circle is zoned in a district called Urban Center. We also use plan development districts a lot. Most of the vacant land is zoned as open space at the moment, but we're obviously open to changing that. We just left it that way while it was open space. Here's the existing parks. I mentioned Addison Circle Parks, the big green park on the northern edge of the development site. This roadway network. And then the airport noise and height restrictions. As I mentioned, the site is adjacent to Addison Circle Airport. The noise contours affect this development for anybody that's done development adjacent to the airport before. Typically, the FAA will want to avoid having residential uses within the noise contours. That obviously leads to noise complaints, things like that. So you'll see when we get to the development plan that we've accommodated that and pushed the residential outside of the noise contours. Also, from a height restriction standpoint, as you might assume, as you get closer to the airport, the buildings will have to be a little bit more restricted in height. And so you'll see that the building stair step and respect that in the plan as well. So as far as the engagement process, we went through a pretty robust engagement process to make sure that there was community buy-in to the plan. We started with four stakeholder interviews with different groups within and adjacent to the study area to make sure that we understood what they hoped to see through the process. We also held three public meetings where members of the community, both residents and businesses, came in and provided input. And then the City Council appointed a special project committee that held four meetings to kind of talk about this plan in detail, one of which was a tour of other transit-oriented developments in the North Dallas area, just to give them a context and some reference to what good and bad transit-oriented development can be. Out of that process, four main themes emerged. First, we wanted to make Addison a year-round destination, and that would have this development serve as a regional draw, so continue to draw people in all year round, not just for the three times a year we have our main special events, but do something here that was special that would make us a true destination on the line. As we did that, they noted that we were missing some pedestrian connectivity and bike trails into the rest of Addison. They wanted this development also to serve as kind of a springboard out to the remainder of Addison, so address some of those gaps with a focus on safety for pedestrians. And then lastly, continue Addison's strong commitment to well-designed and maintained landscaping and open spaces. So that led the council to adopt the following vision statement, and I won't read it, but again, you have the main theme that Addison's going to be a destination, and that this development will, again, complement the events that we host already and make it a year-round destination, and then continue Addison Circle's strong reputation as a place to live, work, and play. If the vision is kind of the foundation of future development in this site, these guiding principles are kind of the framework that start to shape the development. Again, I won't go through these in detail, but they have been provided to the panel in the back of the slide deck for you to review kind of the narrative description that went with each of these. But there they are. These are some photos that the community gravitated towards when we started talking about desired uses and character of development. So we provided that for the panel to get a flavor of what was talked about. And then lastly, this is the preferred development plan. This is admittedly not the only way that we think development could happen, but we think this is a way that development could happen that would meet both the vision and the guiding principles. Really intended to be kind of the starting point of a conversation, but this is very flexible. Fred will walk through this in a little bit more detail, but just kind of at a high level, you see the blue on the left side of the screen, those are office buildings with some sort of retail or entertainment ground floor uses. Again, that probably be the heart of what would make this a destination. The heights of those stair step down to the airport, so the westernmost building is 4 stories, then stepping up 8 stories, and then 12 for everything east. And then you kind of have a transitional area in the middle of the development here that, depending on market forces, we could see that either being residential or office. It's outside the noise contour, so that's where we've said that residential is appropriate. And then as you get along the major roadway over here, the Dallas North Tollway through, that was probably a suitable site for office along the tollway. Most of Addison along the tollway is an office corridor, so we thought that was consistent with that development pattern. And then on Dart's property, we have additional opportunity for additional retail development and perhaps some additional parking as well. It needs to remain not only a rail station, but it's also a bus transfer station as well, so some of it will have to be used for that, but there may be some potential for additional development on there as well.
The center area north of the green.
One of the other existing elements in Addison Circle is on the north. This is Addison Circle Park. On the north side of the park is the Addison Conference and Theater Center. So Addison owns and operates a conference center that's used for both business venues and then private events as well. We also have a pretty robust theater program with the Water Tower Theater that hosts events and productions throughout the year as well. With that, I'll hand it over to Fred.
Okay. As planners and designers, I think Charles did a great job of giving you the context and the setup and opportunity here is amazing. So from a kind of classic TOD point of view, everything that you would want is already there. There's a great town center, there's great residential, there's great now transit access with the Silver Line coming through. It's at the kind of confluence of major arterials. I mean, it's an amazing location. So our job was to try to envision some alternative scenarios that would take it a little bit further. So we came up with 3 options. I'll just run through very quickly. One has a residential focus, one has an office focus, and one is more kind of a mixed focus. But they're all inherently mixed-use development with office, residential, retail, hotel, a food hall, and great pedestrian connectivity. So in a way, think of this as like filling in the hole in the donut, so to speak. So this first option has a residential focus. I won't go through all the numbers, but you can see in yellow the residential. We're trying to be fairly aggressive in terms of the density here. To meet the aspirations of the plan. The blue office buildings on the left are, as Charles said, office with retail below. And then around the transit station, there's an opportunity to maybe have a hotel or a food hall or some kind of more interactive kind of use that would take advantage of the new station. So So that's one option, and we call it the residential focus. The office focus is it's just a different version of the same theme, but we're programming more office uses versus residential. The Addison Town Center, the park, I think is highly programmed. There's thousands of people there sometimes, so you got to think about the adjacencies when they have thousands of people there and a music event going on. Is that the place you want to live next to, or do you want to work next to? It's an interesting kind of development question, I think. Again, you know, the connectivity around the station is really important. We have a real opportunity there to make something really special happen as people. The buses come there, the train will be there. It'll be a real kind of intermodal opportunity. So this is option B. And then what we call the alternative mix, again, just a little bit more, this adds the hotel, a little bigger food hall idea. It's a little more mixed use. It's a little bit of everything. And again, the same kind of basic principles are at work here. Here we show some office and residential and a hotel all near Addison Circle Park. And then a little more of an office complex to the right side, a little more office use to the right. So I'll just go back real quickly. Just option A, residential. Option B, office. And option C, alternative mix. They're all roughly the same scale density, but a little bit different in terms of the programming. So, and then this is kind of adding them all up. I won't bore you with the numbers. They all, I think, go beyond the original program aspirations. We think this is a place to go big. I mean, you have everything in place already here, so let's not underdevelop this site. We do have forces at the airport and things like that to deal with in terms of height. So those are the three options. Okay.
Do a quick flyover of some of the market statistics associated with this particular area. And I'm going to and augment that with just some observations, but let's see this one. Yeah, just turn it off. There we go. This is information really drawn from CBRE on office, and there's no slide on multifamily. The office market, the North Texas market, is a well-researched market. CBRE publishes information extensively. CoStar provides information extensively. So it's fairly easy to get current contemporary snapshots. I would point out that North Dallas office is always top. And this particular market has strong office, but the vacancy rates up here are always going to be in that 15-20% range if there's enough inventory coming on that you're constantly dealing with that. I do think because of the strength of their location on the toll road and also now with the introduction of the Silver Line, they're going to get some new action on there. Rebecca Tudor, who's joined us today, just did a study a couple years ago looking at the premium for light rail experience stations in our market. And it's about 12-15% above the same type of office product located in an area not served by rail. She made another interesting observation that the most successful light rail stations were closely located freeways. So I think that went through a little bit, but it turns out that they actually do reinforce each other, and the toll road is virtually right next to, within, you know, probably a quarter mile, half mile of the station. On the multifamily is up here is very strong. This is actually a submarket inside of a market. They've got a new proposal coming in for over $2 a foot. To give you kind of a range, some of those are a little bit lower than that. I want to make a statement about Addison generally. Addison, Wes said that they punch above their weight. That's very true. But they're also very willing as a city to undertake a joint investment and equity investment with the developer. Addison Circle, which Sasaki actually helped plan years ago, was a big statement at the time. Addison was actually a flex tech low-rise industrial center for decades. It has totally transformed now, and now it's the character you see now. But that was a very conscious intent, so it's important to understand that motivation. They took on a Sam's department store that they did a major conversion on. Again, it was fairly controversial. It's been very successful. And then I took on a big multifamily area that was the old garden-style two-story apartments. I want to call them Vitruvian to get the name right. And I think you're up to the goal is around 5,500 units, something like that. A lot of those are built. There's one or two areas that are remaining to be built. But they're willing to take on big projects. They have big ambitions, and they've been patient. They put together the land for this site over about 30 years, slowly and collectively. They wouldn't have liked to have wait that long to get the light rail or the rail station. They're more patient than they thought they would be. It took a while. But the rail line, by the way, it has a groundbreaking today. And it has a $908 million RIF loan, a couple hundred million dollars of grants and local contributions. And it will be about 10 stations, and will connect 28 miles from DFW Airport to the east side of the region. So it's there's a lot of investment going in right there. That I should mention on the transit center, it's probably the second or third most active transit center in DART's system. It's unusually heavily used. They have a very big food and beverage and hotel complement up there. So your workforce is a big consideration in terms of activity in that particular market. I'm going to jump. The retail is always a little bit tough up there. Actually, there was a major shopping center called Crestwood Mall. It got scraped about 15 years ago and came back as basically a multi-power center. It's very successful now. But we were over retailed. Dallas as a marketplace is over retailed always. It's actually having pretty good 3 years to 5 years right now. So retail is always a challenge. They do much more successfully in their area, but they have a big focus, of course, on restaurant and hospitality. A little bit about the developer solicitation. A couple things have shaped recently deal structuring. The state. Okay, that's perfect. We'll be right there. The state legislature recently passed some non-helpful laws for the city, but one of them was that it basically removed the city's right to control exterior materials. Where previously that they could control it through zoning and other code restrictions, they've really removed a lot of that. So the consideration of outright sale and packaging of the real estate versus a long-term ground lease has changed a little bit, and they're more actively considering a long-term ground lease kind of a structure, maybe 99 years. But to give them a little more control over, under that model, they can, in fact, speak to exterior materials and design that the state's essentially taken away from cities just recently. So that's a consideration. It's not that they wouldn't do it, but on the other hand, it is a major consideration. The general approach that they're thinking about is a master developer. This is one of the things we're testing with you all. In other words, assigning all of the land that the city owns to a single developer under a master developer sequence, as opposed to a multiple developer sequence, carving out pieces and then brokering it out that way. That's a presumption. They think that it would be better for the interest of this, and the presumption would be that they're looking for an urban developer who has experience and understands capital stacks and the kinds of things associated with. This is probably something like a $750 million to $1 billion program that you saw there by the time you get done with it. So it takes someone who operates in that level. Unfortunately, there are a number of those. I mentioned the ground lease versus outright sale. Both of those are available in meeting with legal counsel for the town. They went through a whole series of options. And it was, yes, we can do that. Yes, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. How would you like to do this? And I've worked with this attorney a long time, actually. And this was one of the rare instances where they really do have an incredible amount of flexibility. They just approach things as a town differently than some of their surrounding communities. And so there really aren't very many legal impediments. It's more what the developer wants to do. The other point would be that we purposely discussed this where there's town of Addison property which is locally acquired with local money, no federal impediments. The DART property, which can be part of the property, does come with federal impediments. And we've wanted to structure this so that Addison can proceed at its pace, which would be faster,
And then if the developer would like to try to build in opportunity to build on the DART side, DART is not opposed to that at all, but their process is much slower. So they want to make sure that, they're not encumbered in development progress and process by the federal process. But their land is all locally owned. I should mention that they have, I forget how many individual parcels that they acquired and cleared. So they're still platted as single family lots and that sort of thing. So there has to be a major replatting and rezoning of all this. They're also open to rezoning, and they have a history of being very accommodating. The presumption is that we would work with a broker investment advisor that does a lot of packaging of P3s, understands the sophisticated and complex arrangements, and would market this opportunity on a national scale to people who would be capable of doing this. They would assist in the qualification of the developers who would then participate and then evaluate the individual submissions. The city, again, has a wide range of economic incentives available to them. There's something called Section 380 in Texas, and that essentially gives local cities the ability to do grants and use 380 outright grants for a variety of purposes. So the towns all do that a little differently depending on how they want to work on it. There's also tax abatement strategies. There are also some special sales tax districts you can construct. The reason I mentioned the convention center area to the north of the green is that you could build a convention center hotel, let's say 150-room, kind of a special-purpose hotel, and you could build, you could, it falls inside of 1,000 feet of where the meeting facility is, and so you could capture a sales tax and so forth for that and flow that into that particular deal. Lots of land use tools, as I mentioned. The timing is they'd like to be able to go through this process, take the benefit of your wisdom and comments, repackage this all, put it in front of the town council this fall, brief start on this, and then get out to the marketplace in spring of 2020. That is basically the end of my comments.
Yeah, well, I think what I'd like to do, Tom, if I understand, is other clarification questions that you, the panel, might have while we're just asking the sponsor. So I'm going to start with Molly. Things that you can just give without a lot of depth. Go.
Great. I do have a few questions. So I noticed that there was reference to land ownership. So I'm trying to get my arms around the property that has already been assembled and is in control by the city versus property that may need to be acquired and the challenges therein.
So this map shows the different property owners in different colors on the southern side. So there's three main areas of property that we don't own. First, as you get to the right side of the picture along the tollway, that blue area and that purple area, those are owned privately. We've had the discussions with both of those property owners. They're willing to participate in some way. Obviously, the devil's in the details there, but they're willing participants. We also have a cluster of kind of older, smaller development. You can kind of see that kind of rainbow of colors on the left side of the picture. Those are also owned individually that we'd have to kind of work through something there. We've started those discussions as well.
Okay, well, that's great news, because sometimes that's one of the hardest challenges. My other question relates to entitlements. So I noticed that there was reference to addressing entitlements and zoning after the master developer is selected. And if you could just describe some more of what your strategy is there, because based on our experience, developers are seeking clarity before they would invest a lot. And a lot of times it has a lot to do with your past experience and proving that you're a very successful development partner. So I was just wondering how you're handling that outreach and engagement.
Sure. So that's actually one of the questions we wanted to throw back to the panel. Of our thought process is that we view this as a partnership, and so we wrestled with, do we go ahead and rezone this and then just kind of sell that to the development community, or do we go out and say, hey, bring us your ideas, we're flexible, this is kind of at a high level what we want to see happen, but the details that go through the zoning process, we'll handle those once, you know, we see a proposal from you and we kind of work through those. I think there's pros and cons to both approaches, but our thought was that we wait, and that's been our history in the past, is finding a development partner and then cooperatively going through the process with them.
And a quick add-on the replatting of this probably is not something you want to go through twice. So the thought was, let's let the developer come in and weigh in on how they want to repackage and the parcelization. The second thing is, for those people who don't work in Texas, it's much easier for zoning to get accomplished working with the towns in Texas than it is on the coast. So they're much more friendly to developers and genuinely like to work with developers.
Sorry, one last quick question related to time.
Time, I need to.
No problem.
Everybody else a chance.
So just one, you mentioned going out to the community and kind of working with them. What was their response to like the level of density that you're proposing? Were they, because that's usually one of the places that good ideas sometimes fall down. So where, you know, what was their response, and do you feel like you got a good good input from a variety of people around Addison?
So yes, we do feel like we got a lot of input. The council was very selective, particularly with the advisory committee, to make sure that there were for leaders in the community on that that had both the pulse of the community, but also could go back and kind of carry the message as well. Overall, the feeling here was, if you're going to have density anywhere, it should be next to your transit center. And so by and large, the vast majority of the community was all in favor of getting as much density here as we could. Frankly, if we didn't have the airport next door, we'd probably have proposed even more density. But we don't anticipate any issues there.
One comment that I'm starting to be awkward. While that is true, and I believe we got that feedback, there is also a lot of density already in other parts of the community. So I think what you can see in general in North Texas is that people are accepting of it, but there's also a group of people that may not necessarily love the idea of a deep additional density. So while that's there, I think we've gotten appropriate feedback. It's just something to keep in mind that there may also be people that do have some partners.
Next. How well received are ground leases in the Dallas market?
Quite common. Probably 10 years ago, not well at all. But in the last 10 years, last decade, there's been a shift in that, frankly, the airport. DFW Airport has been doing ground leases for a long, long time. DART started doing a couple in that period of time, and there's beginning to be, as a function of markets and the access to some markets. I just retired from DART, and we were working with several different developers. The decision was by the agency to do exclusively ground leases. And as long as it's out at 99 years or longer, not 50, there's generally sympathy for considering ground leases, and the banking community, the lenders, have actually been supportive of that. But I'd say what a lot of people try to go shorter, 25 years. I mean, a lot of people, I'm talking mainly about jurisdictions, 25, 35 years. That never really worked very well. Even 50 has been a struggle, but the 99-year formula seems to have been the one that does work.
Just one more thing about that is, at our airport, we've been doing ground leases for decades, so we're accustomed to that. That's something that's part of our way of doing business.
Actually, actually, they know a lot about transit as a city. They're not a junior partner in that. They've gone through that whole exercise and became pretty sophisticated as a town.
Next question.
What is the commuter parking program at the rail station, and who built it?
So that's somewhat to be determined. There's a surface lot there now. DART is not planning on adding any additional parking as part of their rail project. However, depending on how this plays out, we'd probably add some sort of structured parking either on that site or associated with the development for general public parking. Being that this is sort of at the center of the line, we don't anticipate the kind of parking demand that you may see kind of at an end of a line where people are driving in to get on the train there. So we don't think that just as it is today, there will be that much demand for commuter parking.
DART will tell you that they are overparked at that station currently, and they actually have about 3 acres or so that at this point they've deemed surplus and could be used for parking if need be. I think the town also wanted to avoid becoming a commuter parking station because they are proximate to the toll road. There would be a temptation for people in the northern suburbs to come down there, park, and then go on to the airport. So I suspect that parking management strategies are going to be designed to discourage that idea.
Next question.
I've got three questions. I say that so that they'll let me ask all three of them.
Maybe.
The parking structures that I see connected to the building, what have you got in mind as far as the ground floor treatment of those parking structures? That's one. The second is there's a lot of open space, and I've wondered what kind of discussions you've had as far as open space connected to treatment. And then also, on the main street retail that goes from the rail station, is that a street or a destination way?
Okay, so taking those one at a time, we haven't gotten past sort of the conceptual vision for what we would talk about from parking treatments, but we'd be sensitive to that. We'd prefer that parking not be on the ground floor, and if so, it'd be treated with a mixture of landscaping and masonry and things like that would dress it up as much as you can. But we'd like to avoid that, particularly along the more active corridors. With regards to the open space treatment, again, very conceptual at this time, but what the council and the committee have talked about is that they really want those plaza areas in between the park and the transit center to almost be extensions of Addison Circle Park. And so that it's almost like a park-like experience as you're walking from the transit center north to the park, and that perhaps in the future the special events we have could extend into those areas. So we would anticipate pretty high quality finishes there as well. And then the main corridor, I think you're talking about, let's see, right there. That would be pedestrian. That's what we're thinking.
Looking at that diagram, why did you put the grocery store over that far end?
That's probably the intersection that gets the most vehicular traffic through it. So we figured a grocer like that would probably want to be on that corner. But again, we're flexible with where it is located.
Looking at what I perceive as the parking structure on the other end of that barbell in that station area, is that the station itself or is that the parking?
So the station itself is right here, and then the proposed potential parking structure is just to the south of it. And that was the thought process here, was on the ground floor or somewhere in it, that's where you could have either a food hall or some sort of additional retail opportunity or something like that.
One of the examples you used was Mockingbird Station. Is that something that you really like in the context of that particular site as an opportunity, or is that not the direction you'd like to go?
No, I think there's some lessons to be learned from Mockingbird, but I think on a whole, yes, that's a very representative
example of what we'd like to do. That was one of the sites that the committee visited, and they liked what they saw there.
Okay, thank you. So let's now go to some of the observations. And Molly, you could probably ask a sneaky question in again if you have to, but I think we got the basics out. So observations and just some of the thoughts and comments.
Okay, I will try to be brief. So first, just as context, I recently completed an economic development strategic plan for the city of Lancaster in Dallas County. So I am very familiar with the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex market. And I can say that the city of Addison is very well located in one of the most affluent and highest growing population cities in the Metroplex. And the in-migration in the Dallas County, even though it has slowed, is among the highest in the nation. And based on our research, we found a tremendous housing gap in the entire Metroplex. So based on what I'm seeing here in terms of achieved rental rates per square foot for the multifamily and the office vacancy rates, I would say that my vote would be to lead with the residential-focused plan. And to the extent that you can use all of these very powerful tools like TERS or other incentives, I would also recommend to the extent possible that you would explore including mixed income or workforce housing as part of your development plan in order to assure that you can achieve this economic diversity that you mentioned. I do believe that there would be opportunity for office, but it's likely that you would have to engage this broker in securing some sort of anchor tenant or a build-to-suit type tenant, and potentially even in the front end some rent subsidies, and that goes for retail too. I would say that the plan is very compelling, especially in the context of the market and in the competitive context of the Dallas Metroplex. This is really exciting because this is true TOD, and a lot of the other stations we visited, they're not quite achieving true TOD development. They're calling it TOD, but it's not functioning in terms of the design and the programming and the planning like true TOD. So this plan is very compelling. So I think that I'm, again, trying to be brief. Those would be my top line recommendations. I hope that's helpful and happy to discuss it further.
So I guess I'm going to echo Molly on the residential focus and just the question more about affordability and workforce housing. I mean, that is a current theme in every major metropolitan area that we're seeing, you know, across the country. And I will say I used to live in Dallas in the late 90s, but it's been a little while, so I'm not super plugged into what it is now. But I do think that that is a real consideration. I applaud you for really thinking about parking and from to your comment before about really not making this a commuter station, which then, you know, doesn't have the first half mile that people walk to the transit station be through a sea of parking. And thank you for taking that approach. But really making sure that the pedestrian walk is really direct, is really safe, is well lit, like, and engaging, right? Like, I think that often the pedestrian and the bike that usually goes in hand in hand is kind of shoehorned in on the end, or people think like, oh, we can meander, but like people want, they want to walk directly, they want to get there quickly, safely, and feel good about it. So those are my two. I mean, I'm seeing parts of it, and when I zoomed in on my PDF last night, I could see more of it. But those are the two. So like making sure that the affordability element, and I'm not sure if, you know, from a regional perspective, there is like an obligation of Addison to, you know, do their fair share of trying to contribute to that. But like really thinking about what that looks like, because if you've got grocery, if you've got retail, if you've got hotel, you've got the conference center, a lot of people coming in. So how do you kind of start to provide some of that in this environment?
I would think you'd want to look at some senior housing in this area, and certainly with all the mass transit facilities that you have, I think that could be an important component of the overall project. And then the planners will get after me, but how important is that road on the south side of the park?
It depends.
Consider it gone.
Couple of different observations here. You've got pretty good density in this plan, but I think it would be worth looking at how you get greater proximity. That is, mix up the uses more. It strikes me it's still pretty segregated, and that leads to not really different behavior on the part of residents and employees. And that gets right to the comment about the grocery. I think locating it based on traditional traffic counts misses the opportunity here to put it much more central to all those thousands of new residents and employees and use that kind of retail function as a more of an organizing principle. And, you know, experienced urban grocers will know how to do that. They don't necessarily need a corner like that to make a location decision. And then part of looking at how you can mix up those uses and put them closer together opens the opportunity then to look at what your shared parking potential is. Strikes me that the rough parking ratios here haven't yet found the kinds of efficiencies that true mixed use can offer. And boy, that's a heck of a capital question there, as well as just an experiential one. And then finally, I think the future of the transit center, the transit function needs a little greater clarity. Exactly what role is it going to play in the daily lives of people who live and work here? Just how busy is it going to be? And I think answers to that should then guide how you size the infrastructure and the support stuff, or not just the platform, but what happens around it. Because I see an opportunity to integrate it much more closely with its surrounding buildings and open spaces. I think there's a danger that too much open area is left around it. And from what you described, I don't think there's enough activity to make that an interesting, exciting place. It can be an organizing principle, it's a signpost for the community, but I think it wants to be folded in a lot more tightly with its surroundings.
Can I just respond real quick? I think those are great comments. I think we'd love to drive the parking ratios down even more with a more intentional shared parking strategy. I think we can certainly get there, particularly given this is about as urban as it's going to get. And I think the idea of mixing up the uses more, would you envision vertical, mixing buildings that are vertically mixed? I mean, in terms of retail, office, residential in one building? Or I'm just curious what you were, I'm intrigued by that idea.
Yes, certainly some vertical mixing, but I think the focus on what's really happening on, say, the first two levels. So what you see when you're on the street or in the plazas. And the whole, you've got a lot of opportunities to actually create all kinds of interesting courtyards and plazas and on and off the street. There's a lot of great opportunity there.
I think the idea of changing the nature of that southern street on the between the park and our TOD, that's an interesting, really interesting thought about. That could be very different. I mean, it doesn't have to be a traditional street. It could be a, you know, much more of a pedestrian-oriented That's a great idea. We hadn't thought about that, so thank you.
Yeah, I strongly support Dan's suggestion. I'm grateful to look at
it. Well, my experts here have got the more localized chemical specificity, so I'll jump into maybe some bigger picture. I think my commentary would be a little bit more about the pitch and the ask, and
And I got more from your introductory comments, Wes, than I got anything to do with the personality of Addison from the presentation. So I'd say there are so many people out there saying they want places that want to live, work, and play, but for you in a competitive marketplace and an arts, we need to be more specific and be of your place. I then would take that and say, what is the difference? What am I contributing? And from what I also read, you've got Addison Circle, which is driving character and identity of this place. And I don't see that adding value to the arts here. I see you doing this as a development proposition adjacent to the best of what you already have. And so when I then look at the master planning, I say, where is the broader sensitivity and how do each of these elements in their own right connect to the area around them rather than dealing with the focus of the boundary of the study area? I want to see more about leveraging and then adding value to what remains, and so that the development is on the eastern side of the site, adding value to the development zone to its south in the future, and those sorts of things as part of the past. The question, and I don't have a real picture of scale and developer demand, but my question in this, my sense on a development of this scale and impact on your community of 16,000 people, if it's a market developer, do you become branded that development down? So I would just, I'm sure the local experts would have a lot more review on that, but it would seem to me if I've got that much capacity as a market developer or that much ownership, am I the dominant player, am I too dominant, am I contributing, am I really loyal and contributing to you? Or am I going to spin directly, win the job, and then do what I've got to do? So there's a risk there, but there's also the ability for a great partnership if you get that right. I assume you've got that alignment with DART. When I look at DART and the uses around DART, I'm saying, have you, if you put the retail there and it's DART land, I'm assuming in subsequent or late in the delivery of 22, are you going to get the different development after 22, the different post development, or is it integrated development? Do you get the benefits of those groceries and active users as well? And I'd be saying that as you talk about those other retail users, we need to get some of that on early to create that dynamic because we've got stage delivery. And finally, I just ask, I just caution you a little bit. So the community engagement teams have got no commercial angle to them, and that's obviously because they bring them down to the interesting. They don't have the same level of the good work and play there about the green spaces and the parks and the character of the spaces. So have you managed that issue? If you don't have clarity and you're leaving it too open to replanning post-bid, you're not comparing apples with apples. So that's the experience we've had. If you leave planning post-bid process, and you've got too much discrepancy. Someone interprets it as one type of site, someone else interprets it as not really valid or compared to the two.
Okay, you might hear a little bit of a repeat of things because I'm at the end of the line, but a couple things that I'm concerned about is a little bit about is the sense of scale, and I'm a little concerned that what I'm seeing is designed for more towards large volumes of people, versus what do you do on the everyday basis when there's small volumes of people. So I can see an opportunity here to keep it, in order to keep it from going too suburban, but keep it more urban and stay along that side and provide those places and spaces that you go from one place to another and just discovery of spaces rather than making large volume spaces. You have to have that, but you've got it next door. I can see the idea of continuing to allow limited auto access to it and alternative traffic, I call bike lanes alternative transportation lanes now because of scooters and all those other types of things, but to allow that to happen, like the main street or the retail street, maybe that does need a small street and it can be closed during active times, but allowing for that interaction to occur of a typical main street. I really do like the idea of the food hall, but I would expand that and start thinking with the market hall, craft hall, maybe innovative spaces, basically more of a lot of the other things that are starting to occur around that make those spaces more community-oriented and not just vendor-oriented. And then I would really encourage you to make it part of a strong part of the programming, active programming on a day-to-day basis, and make that something that put it into the mix now instead of just saying here's the space activated, but get get people to involve and create a programming for them. And we've had some really successful spaces that are recurring that when they went into it with a programmer in mind and designing for the programming, they were really became successful small spaces. And I this is a lousy comparison, but I first thought the difference between Epcot Center when it's empty and downtown Copenhagen, where I was a few weeks ago, and just how that you wander from space to space, and then there's the pedestrian way down through there. It's that combination of moving from one place to the other. So I just a little concerned about the freestanding buildings and parking structures, and just trying to get more of what is occurring to the north and what is starting to happen. And you see, below Addison Circle moving into that other area to the, I guess, the east direction. So
I think those are great comments. Couple observations. I think the success of this place will have to be at several scales. And I think your point about the pedestrian experience at the very granular street level scale as you're walking through the space has to be very well done. Great materials, a great sense of scale. These drawings are still a little clunky, but as we refine, I think that pedestrian experience is really critical to what people, how they see and feel, the experience they have. I think the idea of tactical urbanism, little pop-up events, and programming, because you can do big programs at the Addison Circle Park, or you can do little programs, to your point about when it's not that busy, but there should be visual surprises and interest and enough activity. You're not just walking through a boring space. So I think there would be some interesting programming opportunities here that could kind of be changeable and tactical and, flexible and experimental. And then that could play off the bigger events in the circle, because they get some pretty big stuff going on in the circle. Anyway, I think the points are well taken.
I'm going to make a couple of quick observations, and I want to delve into something with you. If you're going to do any condominiums, don't do a ground lease. If you're going to have long-term ownership in properties, ground leases are possible, and I appreciate the point that in the Texas community is starting to become more well-received. But there may be other alternatives that you can structure where it's a combined ownership, a public-private partnership type of structure where you may end up with an equity position as well as a residual. We just toured the project just down the street called, City Center? And the Heinz deal, and there's some really good instructive opportunities there with regard to how the relationship between the city and the developer and how they evolved that program. So with regard to structure, don't look at it as outright sale versus outright lease. I think there's a mixed combination of that might be more viable for this solution. And it doesn't have to be the entire thing. It could be pieces of it. So you may kind of think about that. I'm struggling with this because it's a suburban design. You're trying to create an urban environment with a suburban design. I mean, I'd get rid of every parking space that I possibly could get rid of. I certainly wouldn't put that parking structure there, because you just said that one of your goals is not to have commuter parking. If you provide it, they'll come. If you don't provide it, they won't come. So why provide it if you don't need it? The activation of that whole lower end, in my mind, is never going to generate enough traffic volume because you don't have enough proximity to everything. I think it's picking up on what Dan was just saying. I mean, I think the big problem here is you don't have a core central place. And if you, again, walk through the city center, or we went in San Antonio, Tom, the Hotel Ella, was that the one? Was it the Pearl? And I'm not suggesting that's a good example because it was a rehabilitation of a big brewery. But the point is if you look at the way they aggregated buildings, which were there, and aggregated public spaces, which were proximate, surrounded by residential, so all of a sudden you saw people in these smaller spaces. So you got big spaces, small spaces, which I think Dan is trying to convey of what is it like on the ground. And what you want to have is not there. That's I have to come there to go to it. As opposed to I live there and I'm a part of it. Now, I also appreciate you've got this dilemma with the airport, but I would not put the grocery store there. I'd integrate it into the buildings in some fashion in an urban style. I'd make some focal point, and maybe the focal point is that whole intersection What's the main street coming up and down? I can't read it. Form. I mean, maybe that's the main and main, and everything kind of radiates around that. You're looking at this as a linear program. I think you can still bring some things into it, but that needs to be intensified so that everybody wants to be there and hang around, and then they kind of bleed off into the places that are more pedestrian friendly.
I'd say there's already an existing focal point, which is the park, and so I'd be getting a taking point. Absolutely, but I'd be leveraging the park as well as the most people.
Without a doubt. Whichever it is, but I'm just saying, I think that this to me feels too disjointed. It doesn't feel integrated. And that's just from a residential bias developer's point of view. And I also happen to pick up on, I think, several comments with related to the demand. I mean, I appreciate the desire to have a lot of office. I don't see the demand there. And this is really a resi opportunity for you. And I think that will activate the station much more so than the office. I mean, they come and they go. Here you have people living here all the time. You'll have ongoing, continuous activity. The more bodies you put on the street, the better off you'll be. That, I think, will realize what I perceive to be your community goal much more so than more offices. If you put your questions up there, we'll just start walking through them.
Hey, Rick, before we do that, I would just like to make one comment. I think as I look at that plan, I think the biggest asset on the plan is the park. And the park really serves the residential population base. And it's almost the exact opposite of what the plan shows. I would move as much residential to the park and try to pull the park south of where that road is and kind of act as, you know, expand the park and pull it into the community, but really a focus on the residential uses that really can capitalize on the park.
So going quick, we have this challenge of the airport and the proximity, and you're in that zone. How would you do that? Would you leave that in more open space and move office to a different location?
Well, as much residential as you can pull towards the airport, I would try to do that to capitalize on the park. You know, yes, you'll have to still have office uses at the perimeter of the airport. But again, you know, we have a central park in Denver that has created tremendous residential value. I mean, beyond your wildest imagination, little 1,000-square-foot bungalows are selling for $1,000 a square foot. I mean, it's just crazy. And I think the potential is here to do a similar thing. That park is a fabulous asset in an asphalt jungle.
I'm going to ask Dan to kind of pipe in because I think he's got some ideas formed already.
Can we go back to the noise diagram?
And by the way, we'll be catching this vision discussion in consequence of this because I think it's all part of the same.
So what I heard is that does that noise contour eliminate all residential based on this, or is it just a noise issue?
So what we've heard, so we get funding from the FAA, and what the FAA has said is as part of our agreement with them to get funding, we have committed to keeping residential outside the noise contours. And so zoning is ultimately a local decision, but if the FAA were to ever sort of come down on us and we hadn't let residential in the noise contours, they would technically have the ability to full funding and even make us pay back some of the funding that they've given us.
70,
65.
plan. And that makes it easy to understand the reasoning and logic, because I mean, one of the things that I was thinking possibly is you start pushing your park extension over towards the airport side so that you can transition into residential as quickly as possible. If you're limited by that 65 number completely for that reason, I can understand that a little better. So I guess the next question is where do you go with potential uses from an office point of view that maybe becomes less suburban-oriented, more urban office-oriented as you transition into places and the ability to be residential as quickly as possible? Because I agree with everything I'm hearing, but right now I also see that a lot of the office is geared towards it's almost pad site type thing, and I know that's pushing it and you can do it that way, but that's what appears from the Matthew diagram. So how can you take the Addison, Addison Circle development, which is very much a wrap type concept, and turn that and bring that into the office area to create an office wrap type concept. So you start looking at the main street type retail, the activated retail street, the things you see, and I wonder if that's a possibility to shift to that a little bit more of that mixed mindset rather than the freestanding office or underground parking.
Now, just as we're talking through this, and I'm just looking at the questions on vision, questions 1, 2, and 3, and I think we're kind of answering, but I'd like to get other people's input, because if you look at these three questions, the question about ambitious or not, I mean, I think you ought to go for broke, but I think in some ways you're too underserved just by virtue of the way you've aggregated the buildings, and it's more of a suburban model than I think you can create more of an urban mindset into this thing. For example, putting a grocery store inside a building as opposed to freestanding. I mean, that's a classic suburban situation. In every urban environment, you'll see that time and time again. I mean, there's examples around every city in the United States. And, yeah, do the grocers don't like it? Well, sure. But will they go with it? Yeah, they will.
It could go. I'm just saying, I think your idea is interesting, because there would be an opportunity to activate a ground level where the parking would be above it.
Yeah. That is exactly the solution for that parking structure if you want to have that. So who would like to take 1, 2, or 3? Molly, go.
If I could jump in, I cannot emphasize enough the need for double-sided retail. And so I agree with everything that the panelists have been saying about further urbanizing the way the buildings are going to be interacting with each other, and to further support the idea of, in advance of this development getting into the ground, investing in activating space, design and programming, placemaking, pop-ups. And in order to do that, the city's going to have to invest in that. And what I found is a reluctance from elected officials frequently to invest general fund or other funds in that type of programming. And it's going to be an investment that will, I think the return on investment is really immeasurable in terms of what you're trying to accomplish here.
So what I would love, the double-sided retail, I agree with that, but making this, I mean, what I end up seeing in so many places is it's just big box retail, right? And so, like, the floor plates are large, and the only people who can afford to get in there are the same retailers that we see everywhere. And so to whomever made the point about, like, the makerspace, to have, you know, just kind of smaller places that there's more innovation from a retail perspective, that someone could actually, who doesn't have the deep pockets, that they could roll in and hopefully rent some of that space. So it does, that makes it more engaging. That gives the opportunity for pop-ups. That gives, like, a much more active, fun kind of environment, as opposed to just, like, look, there's another, and I'm probably going to show my age, but another Gap or another Starbucks or, you know, whatever the retail du jour is. So I would give a high five for that. The makerspace element, and I love having something like that open to the residents of Addison. So if you're living in an apartment and you really want to do this kind of stuff, you're not having a table saw in your condo, right, or in your apartment. But like places where that is available, I know DC has started to do that through their library system. There have been other fits and starts, I know from a privately funded model with, I can't remember the name of it, but they have pulled out of a lot of markets recently, but they're, you know, really bringing, whether it's metal shop, wood shop, like bringing that to the community so that people can really do that and still live in an urban area.
My comment on the vision, I think there's a lot of discussions, it's a little bit different how we would look at it. That the vision isn't about defending the design or the design at this point of the project, but what I see this point of the project. The vision would be, what is the city going to get delivered in Addison out of this development? And so, what is the developer going to get? And I guess, at a vision level, what we're talking about now, we're getting a lot of really good points, which I think will manifest themselves in the master plan, but at a vision level, I don't still see you've got a compelling enough story about an articulated what the city, what the project is going to look like.
I'll just make a reinforce what you said earlier. I think the residential markets are at this location are going to be much stronger than the office market. And, you know, I think giving consideration to a variety of residential would really make sense. One thing I didn't see, and it's a hot topic in almost every market we deal in, is medical and related uses, institutional type of uses. You know, adding this substantial base of residential into the area, you're going to have tremendous medical needs, especially if you're looking at senior housing and affordable type of housing. That'll have to be, some of the institutional uses that will support the residential are going to be important considerations.
Just to piggyback on that, I mean, if you go to some of these routes, where's a local library? Do you have one close by? Other kinds of senior services or other services where you have?
We actually don't have a library that we own and operate, but we've partnered with both the city of Dallas and other cities around us and their facilities, so they're very close.
You have one heck of a great opportunity to do something that may be less traditional and accomplish a tremendous goal of gathering people around.
Also, has there been any thought or discussion about involving more using the Park Central and everything to get more into the performing arts and having actual institutions or places for community art training?
Yes, we've actually done that in the past, and but we're certainly open to, we want to program the heck out of it.
If community and performing arts and some place for school teaching, bringing community in and then having places for them to perform, and whether it be a big place or smaller places, but the whole idea of activating the community in that direction.
So panelists, do you think that we've answered questions 1, 2, and 3, and then I'm going to ask the sponsor if they think we've answered that? Do you think we've answered your questions on 1, 2, and 3?
About speaking a little bit more about the number two, you know, what's most compelling and what's the biggest negative that you're seeing? I'm trying to tease it out a little more difficult.
I'll take a stab. To me, the positive attribute you have is the fact that you created an Addison Circle and it's a success. And I think you need to play on that. I think you've heard about trying to bring that down in some way, shape, or form, integrate more parks into that whole area, whether it be an office or residential use. To me, the least compelling argument here is that you're still thinking of suburbanites as opposed to urbanites.
And I think you've got to reorient your thought process. If you want to create, even though you're a smaller city, you've got a transit node. And that can be beneficial to that area and really activate the reason to come and go. But the more things that you do to allow people to come and pass through, the less you activate. So that's the biggest observation just from the vision point. I can't articulate it specifically, but I think some of these guys have done that better than I.
One of the points I'd make from a compelling standpoint is just the fact that you came here with reasonably, if not very sophisticated plans and asked for input from the Urban Land Institute. That tells me that you're a very progressive community that's very interested in doing the right thing on a pretty special piece of real estate. And I think that speaks well for the community.
Yes. Hop on to that for just a second. Really, what you've prepared here would be considered collateral to a development firm evaluating this opportunity. So as you take this project to market, I think that you will absolutely have a chance to attract a national firm with capital and with experience. So on that note, I would say kudos to you for having done all of this very hard and expensive work to prep this redevelopment concept for the market.
I just had a thought that is a compelling argument for me, that that whole Central Park concept where your best and most valuable real estate has been allowed for by creating your park. So take advantage of the perimeter, because that's the most compelling and best marketable site that you've got. So I just, my brain went to, don't provide so many holes, but provide a second park if you want to have an extension into it, and take advantage of that perimeter you've got.
I just asked a question. That park, I'm personally intrigued by the more residential flavor for this thing to make it a more sticky place. That park does have some pretty active events. So I'm just curious what your thoughts would be on the adjacency issues. If you're living there, there'll be times when you're in the middle of a rock concert or, you know, maybe that's...
In my opinion, that makes it more appealing. You know, that's what the people are after, is that activity.
I'd agree with that as well. I don't know if you've had a chance to go down to the wharf in Southwest, but I mean, that is a very similar type of development. They've got, you know, it's super pedestrian, and yes, they have vehicles, but they're slow, and you know, you don't really want to be there in a car. And they've connected to the waterfront, but I mean, there is one of the best music venues in the region right there, and they have, you know, concerts going multiple times a week, and there are still people who are paying big money to live right there. So I think there's a good, I mean, that I think is a winning strategy. It's not necessarily every day. I mean, you were saying that the activation is kind of a couple of times a year in terms of the really big events. So I mean, I think that's a draw, not a flaw.
Just kind of a funny comment. Seniors can't hear, and the kids love it. They don't care. So, you know.
That's true.
Let's go to the next group of questions on developers. Anybody want to start out on that one? So best method to present the opportunity. I think you heard a lot about marketing. I think David's right on to something of trying to how you're messaging this thing, and I think we need to really work through it. By the way, if you produce a resi-dominant scheme, and that's the direction you want to go, that'll attract a whole group of people that are coming from that angle as opposed to more of an office-dominant. So we can kind of get into the master developer discussion in a second.
I agree with that. I think the resi guy is going to give you more in the broader context as opposed to the asset-based approach to the commercial. The other thing I'd be putting in the early days is, what does the city need in terms of physical infrastructure and obligation, and articulate that very clearly. Our experience in these markets developer is if you leave it to interpret it to the bid, then you're going to get their interpretation of what they think you need. But if you have an absolute ask and a demand, put it in early and say, we want, you know, 456 something, or we want this, or we want CodeGen, or we want whatever. We really articulate and have that as an obligation up front. They know that as their tax or framework that they're going to deliver from day one.
Nobody else want to weigh in on developers? I'll take a roll on it, but I'd like to have a few other comments. Questions 1 through 5?
Well, I'll make one observation. I think, you know, going through a process of identifying the strongest developers for each element of the master plan is going to be a real important part of it. Certainly the Dallas-Fort Worth area has fabulous mixed-use developers available. So I think with a good presentation, you know, what we've done in the past is, and I think the city would do itself well if it did this similar thing, is set up a war room and invite the real sophisticated developers into the war room and put your presentation on. You know, I think you've got some fabulous tools. You know, I think a little later we're going to talk about branding, but I think branding is going to be an important aspect to identifying the community and getting people involved in the development.
So I can't really speak to the developer part, but it's more about having different, what I wouldn't want to see is one developer and then one look and feel of everything, right? So having the multiple architects, having the multiple kind of different, we talked about different places, but encouraging, if you do go down the path of the one master developer, that there is, that they're not then also going with one master architect, right? Like that there is a lot of variation in the buildings, in the materials, in the lighting, I mean, all of that kind of stuff that doesn't feel kind of a mishmash. I mean, it does, there is still some sort of connectivity amongst all of that, but that it does, it doesn't feel just like a monolith of buildings at all.
Sorry, there's one other question I'd make on that developer approach. Are you going to bid or offer your master plan, or are you offering the density opportunity and letting their master plan? And that's a critical difference. I can't. We're talking a lot about common on this particular design, but the year of the framework and that sort of thing, and a resident master developer will have a different view than a commercial master developer. And that's what you've got to get that worked out. Am I allowing them to come and redesign this property and that's going to utilize the main reason? And if you want to go that way, that's one particular route. If you go the other and just want to fit your master plan, that's a different approach. That's a pretty fundamental where I have a whole clarity on that.
That's a really good point. And I think, as David mentioned earlier, if there's certain things you want, they really do, not just an ask, but they really do have to be illustrated. And I think circulation and the character of the different streets and pathways, rights of way, really need to be nailed down. Those are character defining as well as organizing. The architecture, the landscape would be another thing. But those pieces really dictate how it all fits together and what the ultimate experience is. It's really critical.
I mean, David stole my thunder, because to me, I would approach this completely the opposite of the way you're going right now. I would come back and say, I've got a blank slate, and we believe the demand in the marketplace for residential, so you're going to do, you know, you kind of request for qualifications and ask people to come in and take a look at this thing and give you some ideas of what their design thoughts would be. And with that, that becomes a selection process for the master developer. I think the point just made by Allison is a critical point. You can dictate these outcomes by saying this is not going to be one everything. It's going to be a series of different things. You can do that with one master developer who must bring in, say, 3 or 4 architect teams, or you can kind of call it by different blocks, however you want to approach this. But opening the question, letting the market give you some feedback may be the most informative thing as you evolve through the process. You could end up with one of these schemes very comparable to what you do, or something that you haven't even thought about that is just not their vision. But again, I'll repeat David's point about marketing who you are, what you want to be,
and what the goals and objectives of the community. So somebody can interpolate that and say, or interpret that and say, well, I think I understand where this community wants to go, and our job is to help you fulfill that dream as opposed to fit everything into the boxes as you've defined them. You've got a couple of constraints you have to work around, but outside of that, you may have ultimate flexibility to open a lot of things. We've heard about closing the street, doing other kinds of things to improve connectivity. You can put some of those principles in the conversation and say, this is open for discussion. You can think about these as organizing thoughts. So I think the concept of a master developer is a good one because it makes your negotiation a lot simpler. It's expediting the process. I just think you have to make it very clear that you aren't expecting it to be one big campus design program. This is going to be an urban environment that you want to get with granular detail that has to be articulated by a series of teams to work it through. You know, the master developer can bring in other developers and do pieces of it, as opposed to that organization doing it all themselves. But that's left down the road. The question four I'll just address in this sense. You say chilling effect. I mean, typically it's the entitlement issue. That's what drives us all nuts. But I think that given the way you presented it, although I must say that you kind of gave me a little bit of anxiety when you said, well, there are some people out there that don't agree with the way we're going.
You are from California, right?
Unfortunately, yes. And I think that's the one positive benefit, so it's not the chilling effect. But I would also just say that, you know, we've gone through the process the way we have, and we've tried to balance all the community interests, things of that sort. The need for financeability of the ground leases are some of the more problematic things, and I appreciate the fact that people have gone more that way. When you do it at an airport, it's one thing. It's mostly airport-serving activity. It's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. This is a much more complicated process, and I think that figuring out some ways to create fee ownership is going to make your horizon broaden vis-a-vis the financing communities and anybody else's participation. I think we'll narrow your field by saying we'd like to prefer this as our way to go. But I think we can accomplish your goals without doing it as an outright sale and still have some participation in the process.
Let me add one comment. Earlier we talked about how your mixed use is working, and we talked about vertical mixed use. Stress to the developer that you want both horizontal and vertical mixed use.
If I could just add a couple of notes to Rick's comments. So in terms of the chilling effect, I had the same reaction, the same anxiety. So in the RFI, to the extent that you can describe how you're going to provide the development team with clarity or control, I would urge you to try and articulate that. And on another point, in terms of this concept of creating not a block campus, but a development site with variation and, you know, some organic feel, authentic feel, you should in this RFI emphasize a premium on landscape architecture as well as architecture. And in fact, you may explore, as part of your developer incentives, establishing a development incentives fund for public realm improvements. You know, even if it's a minor contribution, it shows the developer that you're trying to be a true development partner in this process to achieve the, you know, the look and feel and experience once the thing is built.
Let me pick up on the last two questions, 4 and 5, and bleed into the land assembly. And I appreciate your comment about me to California, because you're dead right. But what is interesting about what I've learned is a lot of it's about process, and oftentimes what you take for granted other people may not understand. So defining the process that you're going to go through, particularly when you have some assemblage of out parcels that you haven't quite gotten into play, how are you going to go through that process? So if you bring a master developer in, and he says, well, I got 71% of the land, but I want to master plan the whole thing. Is there a recalcitrant? You have the group at the one end, I guess, of two owners down at that one end. Are they bought in? Do they want to cede control? Are they developers themselves? Are they just passive landowners? Are they willing to do land swaps? Or they might say, well, you know, if you guys want to control this, I'd really covet something over here that might be more to my
mindset. Again, I'm not knowing what exactly their goals and objectives are, what they have. Is it just dirt and they prefer to have something completely different in their location? That process of what I need to get from here to there times into the number five timing. Timing of the transit station since you started construction is really kind of irrelevant. If you hadn't started, it's, well, when is it really going to start? When has it been funded? But it sounds like you funded it, started, away it goes. I can measure that in my sequence. So that's the least of my concerns at this moment in time. But the land assembly is one of the anxieties because I want to make this whole thing work. And if I've got an out parcel that's going to take me to court because he doesn't want to give up his rights, even the small guy, that's a problem. So you need to kind of think through from here to there. The other thing, what are the entitlement issues that you are going to do vis-a-vis the developer? Are you going to start with what you have and ask them to participate in the zoning and the land planning and all that stuff? Or do you want to do some of that yourself beforehand? And those are the, just lay it off exactly what you're thinking and make it very clear. Then it goes back a little bit to the messaging, you know, your broad message, but also the specifics of what your job is and what you expect their job to be. Anybody?
Well, certainly just having a three-year window to get everything you need to do with accomplished is going to be very challenging. I, you know, 3 years may sound like it's a long time, but it's not, given, you know, the tremendous number of steps that you have to go through. Kind of as a lead-in, it's certainly the entitlements that create the value for the various developers. So, you know, getting that question eliminated, you know, from what the developer has to evaluate is going to be very important. And maximizing the development potential, I think, is certainly the way you want to go on a strategic parcel of ground like this.
I'm just going to take a shot at number one on land assembly, and then I'd like my panelists to kind of hit me if they don't agree. I tend to like the idea where you don't do any of the zoning and the rest of it, but you lay out the process very specifically with a milestone set. So we're going to do this in this amount of time, we're going to do this in this amount of time. We work collaboratively, so they're part of it. They don't have the risk. You have the risk. You need to that's your part of the delivery. And in that context, it goes to all the pieces. So it's zoning. It's acquisition of those outlots, what your exact process is, the right-of-way process, the replanting process. How long does that take? Is that a 30-day or a three-month process? Every one of those things, the more you lay that out, and I get your city attorney or other people that kind of define it, the more clarity you have about every aspect of this deal, including the negotiation of the final agreement, whatever it might be, all those things are going to make your job easier to attract people and say, ah, this is something I can get done in the next 3 years. It'll be coterminous with this opening of the rail site. And I can be in on the ground floor and I can have everything that my project can start going while this thing is going if these guys can tee this thing up in the next 12 months. I'm with Dan. I think the opportunity to get all this stuff done is a pretty aggressive schedule. I think it will take you the better part of the time between now and 20, what is it?
He is from California, is that right?
Yeah, but take as much uncertainty out of the process as possible. Yeah.
That it's uncertainty and also specificity as to how long you think it'll really take.
And I would just add, put together a design guideline to gear towards the public realm app and not necessarily towards the architecture. Provide the envelope or the character of what you're trying to fill the gap in, but let the public realm be your main design app.
And in that vein, and I'm sure you're careful about vacating right-of-way, but I wouldn't vacate an inch until you know what the larger plan really is.
And the best way to get the non-owned parcel happens is if you get the planning envelope extended and reduced in the yield extended, take the point forward.
I'm going to ask anybody else on land assembly questions. How helpful the development would inclusion of the bus transit acreage be?
How,
large is the bus transit acreage? Is that the dark area, or is it some subdivision thing?
I believe it's about 4 acres. Is that?
Probably 7 in the aggregate. It's a reasonably good size. Again, they're overparked, but it is a very busy bus transit center. So the one thing is that the rail line will not diminish bus utilization there. It will actually increase it a little bit. It will change the nature of it. DART's going to a lot more microtransit, that sort of thing. But I wouldn't want to suggest that it's going to diminish in activity. The other side is, again, they do have some acreage there. Unfortunately, all of it comes into the cloud of federal funding that was used, so they'll have to go through a process of actually declaring which portions are surplus to their needs, and then go through the compensation process and all that. The big issue there is that it's just the timing of its availability will probably lag by 2 to 4 years what's available on the north side of the track. The other point to make, just design-wise, is that the station is a platform where you have a platform on both sides, tracks in the middle. It's not a center platform. So that's good in a variety of ways, but it is a factor.
Is there an air rights opportunity there, or is it?
There would be. There would be for DART. DART has made a determination that they're willing to. DART owns that rail freight line. It has freight rail rights on it. It's very limited activity, but DART actually owns the determinations relative to air rights.
And right now it's all to surface, is that correct? All to surface, it's all surface level? Yeah. And in the context of the bus transit, is there a way to integrate that into the station so you really have a multimodal programming so that becomes part of this thing? You asked a question about the non-contiguous parcels, as I recall, there to the north. Is that right on the other side of the Addison Circle project? Is that right? Northwest, by the airport? Maybe I missed it.
What we intended by this question, as kind of a follow-up to the master developer question, was maybe do you look at this as two separate sites, Quorum being maybe the bisecting one, and maybe there's one developer for everything that's west of Quorum and one developer that's everything east of Quorum? That was the intent of the question, is maybe there's a couple mini master developers.
Push that again, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. The properties that are adjacent to the airport but further north are not contemplated as part of this specifically. And so the properties that would need to be assembled, if you remember the visual, it was within that western half of the just south of the street that my friend from Denver wants to close. And there's I think 12 or 13 parcels that are right there, and there's a very small block.
But in essence, this concept of the question that you were asking was really the separation of kind of either side of that main spine. My instinct tells me no. I don't know. Does anybody else have any views on that? I mean, you could do it that way, but what I think you'll lose the opportunity potentially is activating that kind of main spine. I mean, that's the only thing that would give me a little bit of pause.
I agree. However, I think there is a question about market demand. It's coming all everything now. And yet you think this real developer you're going to take 5 years or 6 years to actually fill out, then I would contemplate a second development because you're going to get an uplift in your return on investment. So if you've got capacity to yield it all now with a full contract, you go with one parcel. If you feel you're going to build value, you want to share some of that value with the uplift across the whole thing, and you get that in the second part.
I think you could also achieve that with this more PPP structure where you basically have an upside potential on the whole thing from day one, and it continues on. So that would be another way to mitigate that.
Although we did have to call on value up with the proper chairs, so you need to track them really well. We've got very good developers now who will bury all the costs and so we've had.
Good point, well said.
I've heard of that.
So I think the last set of questions, if I'm missing it here, are the questions of image. I'm not going to say anything on here because I don't have a clue. I think that's up to some others.
I come back to my initial point, please. What you gave in that first 30 seconds is one of the more compelling messages I heard, and I'm apologizing. But that sort of passion is what I think you need to get this thing off. You're getting a lot of offers and a lot of stories about the work and planning and transit oriented development. But you've got an interesting character right now and you need to get that.
So before I ask the sponsor if they have any feedback questions of us, anybody else have any comments that they'd like to make on any of the questions that come up, Tom?
Cheaters and sales tax collection.
So I throw it back to you. Did we answer your questions? Do you want us to clarify anything in addition that we missed or delve into a deeper point? I think I can probably summarize it pretty quickly for you, but why don't you guys ask us?
I guess the only question I have would be specifically to number two up here about, and I think I know what y'all will say, but I just want to know for sure. Should this have a separate identity from Addison Circle, or should this be combined into the existing Addison Circle neighborhood as far as branding and marketing?
I mean, if Addison Circle is a well-known brand, I'd roll with it. I mean, the amount of effort that you need to do to rebrand to tell people what it is, and I don't know that that's worth the effort if Addison Circle is really like well known throughout North Dallas and you know it's a place to go. I'd use what you have already built.
If you're looking for a development partner to come on board, the development partners will have the confidence, arrogance, and want the idea to sell their product anyway. So you're going to have a time on this project for a period of time. So I'd agree. Sell the Circle is the project name now as you're selling, and then they come on board after it. Then for their individual building as a component of the project.
I'm agreeing with that. I mean, you may go as far as saying Appleton Circle South, just to give it a location, but I wouldn't go any further than that.
I might even just say Addison Circle is growing. We'd like you to participate and suggest to us how you'd like to expand our opportunity and build on this success and leave it open-ended. That's where I would say no specificity, at least is best. Yeah. Any other feedback for us or questions that we missed?
Sorry.
This has been extremely helpful. We value your experience, your input, and you know, we're really excited about this, and we want to do the right thing the right way. And so we'll certainly use this as a learning opportunity to make sure that we're clear, concise, consistent, and with our message from day one, so that when we're out there, you know, it is an experience that not only we value, but other people do value in and want to invest in our community for that reason. We want to make sure that people, we know this is a complex process, and we want to make sure that what people get from us is that one, we're interested in doing something special and big, and number two, we're wanting to do it the right way, and number three, it's something that we want to all be proud of.
evaluate the right parking. So I think all of what you've shared with us today has been very helpful in helping us to make sure we go back and do this in a way that hopefully can improve.
So I'm going to ask each of our panelists to kind of give a little summary of what they think is what they've heard, what they think, and what they'd like to give to you as kind of the one last comment. And then I think we'll give you the best of our brains, what we have at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Okay, well, first of all, again, I applaud all of your very creative planning and thinking. You're creating the future of your city, and you're creating a sense of place. And in the Dallas Metroplex, that's a hard thing to do. So who knows, you could be the next Bishop Arts well down the road. I think that you've assembled all the right ingredients. It's definitely in terms of the design and architecture and your public tools, you have all of the ingredients for success as far as my experience in that marketplace. Again, my vote would be to lead with Resi along with my fellow panelists, and to make sure that you continue with your very hard work in release of this RFI, and I believe that you're going to be able to achieve the vision that you've put forth here.
So, I would second all of that. And then also really push the envelope, right? I mean, it's almost 2020. These buildings will be around for a very long time. It wouldn't be a panel if we didn't talk about autonomous vehicles. But, what we foresee coming down the pike, how does that play in? So really pushing down the parking and really making, pushing the envelope on what you think you can get in terms of bringing in the urban nature into this site, I think we'll go a long way. And I think a lot of people will be really keen to get in on that.
Well, it's an extremely exciting piece of real estate. I think you realize it, and I think that certainly the panel realizes it. I would try to assemble as much acreage into the area as you possibly can. And I think one of the real challenging part of your project is going to be how you integrate that dark parcel into the overall program. I think when you're talking about that it takes 4 or 5 years to get plans approved or get a direction from DART as to how they want to participate, that's a long, that's going to be a long process. But I think it's a very important parcel, and I think thinking big, it looked to me like you dumped a lot of the less intense types of land uses on the DART parcel, and I think it probably has stronger potential than, the attention that you've given it.
Yeah, I think building up the center and really focusing the energy and activity there is critical, and being able to knit two paths. Right now it looks quite bifurcated simply because it narrows and the road goes through, but that's the opportunity because it's a small area that becomes really critical. Knitting the two pieces together then creates the activity. As Dan said, figuring out how to integrate the transit functions physically. Is there any opportunity to modify the pending station area design, the station itself and what happens immediately around it, or at least set the stage that other things can happen over it, beside it, so it looks like it's really integral. And with the move towards more residential, at least residential early on, I think we have the opportunity to distribute parking a little differently. If it's impossible to put it underground, that works well for residents. It does cost more, but under building, under plazas, whatever, I think it creates a much better atmosphere overall.
I'd like to reiterate that the openness to the continent brings the public to the table, and I'd say add values and specificity to the guiding principles rather than generic statements. What do you want for mobility? What are your outcomes of more specificity? I'm borrowing someone else's words here that Dave leads in the presentation to me, but they created a framework for others to do their best work. So don't try to be the expert yourself if you're going to go out there. First, you want them to optimize their development and share in your city and create a framework rather than an answer right now. I think the master plan, as I said in my initial comments, needs to connect, be more outward-looking and connect to the city and bring other parts of the city back into the site. What can this site add to them? What can the city add to this site? Be very clear and specific early in your city demands, what you want, what your obligations from the development, from the developer is. The point here about urban design, public domain guidelines, early expectations and controls, not answers, not design, but principles, very early on, get that thinking, get that embedded. Allow others to add their expertise to your vision. Don't second guess the market. Don't keep it to a greater perspective. Don't keep on spending dollars now because it'll never be the scheme to build.
I appreciate being able to be on the panel, even though I was the last minute addition. I haven't said anything too stupid. It hasn't been my intention. But I do think that you have a wonderful opportunity here to continue to go away from the suburbs can become and create an urban heart. You've created all the connective tissue for that to occur. And it seems like the location now to create your urban heart for your city. And all the things we're talking about, you know, use those principles to establish the fabric of what you're going to create. And I totally believe that, you know, I think of Denver and their multimodal heart that they've created in there and how they've taken advantage of bringing all of the different types of transportation together to distribute. If that could happen here, that could just add to the heart of the urban community and then making it predominantly residential and giving you the community that you want to feed that heart and then providing the facilities that they can use to capitalize on to want to be there. It sounds like a great potential for success from society.
I'd like to wrap this up by complimenting all of you, because I have to tell you, this is a good package for us to kind of chew on to get into this and give you some more specific feedback. And oftentimes you don't see it quite this way. Not only the way you've laid things out, even though we criticize things, you thought it through, you got it out there where you did a lot of work, it was good, where you didn't quite get there, you know, we can help enhance it for you. The questions you've asked, I think, are going to help you clarify where your directions are in the next series of steps. I think I recall this correctly, but if I'm wrong, you can tell me that Addison Circle was way ahead of its time when it was created. Everybody thought you were nuts. And one more time, you're out ahead of the curve. You're generally perceived as a suburban community in an urban environment. Think urban, and I think these things will just flow. That's where the world's going, in a sense, if you look at where a lot of people like to aggregate and congregate. I mean, all you have to do is go around city by city by city in the United States and Europe, and you'll see nothing but the same thing, kind of big concentrated activity where people are out there activating spaces. The more you diffuse stuff, I mean, I criticize the supermarket because it's just a supermarket out there. I want it to be right there, right smack dab in the middle. The food hall, they can play off that stuff. Sometimes the supermarket is the food hall. I mean, you look at what Whole Foods does, I think it's in Seattle or someplace like that, with just one continuation. And, you know, all that becomes the anchor tenant and the food and the rest of it kind of plays off of it. But I think you got the ingredients. I agree with everybody. You've got a hell of an opportunity, and I think you're on the right path. Hopefully when you start to review the tape and all the notes that you've taken and the rest of this information, it'll start to distill. But I think you're going to get people some really good output from the community. So congratulations, good luck, and thank you for the opportunity. I mean, it really has been fun, and I appreciate my panelists. Every one of you have added something to this, and we've had some good conversation amongst us. We haven't had any conversation in advance, so this is the first time for all of us to sit here and give you 2 hours of free things. Okay.
We'll have the recording available by link for everybody, both you guys as well as the panelists. And by the way, if you have any thoughts that you go out and you have a light bulb and you say, oh, I should have told them it,
email me. I'll make sure it gets to the Addison team. Thanks very much.